Heyo, and here we go. It is episode 112 of We Talk Comics, and we're calling this one Days of Movies Past. This is Keith, your host for tonight, and or today, or this morning, or the middle of the night, whenever you're listening to the show, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris.
The man most likely to cause you a driving accident if you're listening to your car. So don't do that. Both hands on the wheel. Pay attention. This is comic book stuff. It's not worth dying for. On the other hand, maybe it is.
We of course record this show in Canada, so watch out for the moose. If you're driving the U.S., if you are in the U.S., watch out for the armed moose. If you are watching in a film version of England, watch out for the moose governor.
Well, let's go on with a regular feature. The news brought to you by Comicosity. The best site on the net for comic news and nothing else. And if you like this movie stuff we're talking about tonight, don't go there. There is no movie news, just comic related stuff. Comicosity.com.
And if you go to Comicosity, you can see all of the covers of the September Futures End books. Have you looked at those, Chris?
I've seen a couple. I haven't actually seen them all at the same time, so I haven't done a comparison.
Which you can do at Comicosity. It's kind of cool.
I will do that right now.
It's kind of cool. The way that the lenticulars are working this time is that they shift from an image of kind of like, we'll say, Superman of today, of the new 52 present day. And then as you turn it, it switches to a Future's End 5 years dystopic future image of the character. So each one is kind of a glimpse of what the status quo for those characters in the Future's End timeline. And as well as the cool covers, which you can take a look at. I am really, really digging Future's End. It is my new first read.
See, I'm finding that completely amazing because you never get into these events quite that much.
Well, in this, it's an odd, I'm not sure I'd call it an event. I mean, it really feels exactly like 52. It is, it's made up of pretty much entirely supporting characters, a lot of B characters. Lois Lane's got a lead role, which is really cool. You know, Frankenstein is in it. And Grifter's got a major role. So it does have that 52 feeling. I love dystopic, can we prevent the future kind of stories. I'm a fan of the Terminator movies where they weren't able to change the future. I like, 1 and 3. 1, 3, and 5. Those are my Terminators. I find 2 kind of mushy. I find it,
Five was the one with nobody. It was the Christian Bale, right?
You betcha.
Okay, I haven't seen that one. I want it, though.
It has many explosions.
I believe it, and for some reason, I don't even think that sucker came out on DVD.
I don't know. I have the Blu-ray of it, so
okay.
Got really
no,
fun for it.
Just it hasn't crossed my path. I figured I'd be just like every Michael Bay movie. I'd be forced to watch it at some point, so it was not worth putting the effort in to see it beforehand.
Yeah, I dig it. I like that it really. I guess it's 1, 3, and 4. I was thinking there was another one that I haven't that I didn't that I wasn't much for, but.
And since we spun off the covers, when are they going to offer lenticular digital covers? This seems like an easy technology to perfect.
Well, they can preview them to us to show us the lenticular version. Like it doesn't. It really, like my tablet has a motion sensor in it. You think you'll be able to figure this out? Probably
it
right
does,
after.
That's too complicated to me.
Probably right after they figure out how to do variant covers on Digital Comics. Yeah, like I ordered a couple from our pals here at Alpha Comics. I don't keep a monthly poll. I read mostly digital and trade. Alpha Comics here in Calgary, nice enough to put a couple aside for me because I do have to must have that Booster Gold lenticular cover for the collection. And just taking a chance that the Justice League Canada cover will be worth getting. So. But kind of, it's a cool story. I'm really digging the, it's like Armageddon 2001 meets 52.
Now, I've only read the first issue of Justice League United. How is that book doing, in your opinion? I've heard mixed things online, but your opinion I take way above others, especially when it comes to Jeff Lemire.
I'm really enjoying it, and I'm really enjoying the dynamics between the characters. There were some real, there was a real comedy moment for me this month. Lemire's tongue-in-cheek Canadian stuff is really good. And I'm enjoying the new characters. I really like the take on Adam Strange. It's not a character I've really had much interest in before. But funny talking about 52.
Yet you still steal my Showcase Presents Adam Strange.
I prefer to think of it as long-term borrowing at this point. Because I do expect it to go back in the mix at some point. It will end up at Brett's house before it hits the shelf, probably. I'm enjoying it. Yeah, the new number two, so part three of the storyline, because they started with the number zero. Part three of five. The first arc is called Justice League Canada, and then the second arc is, I think it's a space story. Well, it's already a space story, so yeah, I don't know what's.
Well, you add Adam Strange in there, and immediately it becomes a space story.
Yeah, but there's some good humor bits in it. They're really, he's pulling in a lot of the space alien stuff, and I am already noticing that. The writers who are working on Future's End are planting little seeds in the other books they're writing. I've seen it. It's pretty overt in Aquaman and the Others, which is written by Dan Jurgens. But Lemire's planted some stuff too that I can see that I can kind of suspect how it'll work.
Now, who's in the lead on Future's End?
We don't know at this point. We don't know yet. The only time we've seen any amount of heroes together was for the funeral of a character that died in the first issue. This is kind of, that was one of the ways that they brought together a whole bunch of the,
I actually meant who's writing it, but.
Who's writing?
Future's End.
Oh, Future's End?
Yeah.
It's made up of several creators. It is Dan Jurgens, Jeff Lemire, Keith Giffen, and gosh darn it, who is the fourth writer? I've just totally blanked
on. I think it's Dan. What's his name? Damn, it's just looting me.
This is a sign that our listeners can. It is not. It's Brian Azarell.
Oh, Azarell. Okay.
Yeah, Azarell, Giffen, Dan Jurgens, and Jeff Lemire, and the art team is cycling an artist for a full issue, so it's a bit different than 52. They had different artists on the same issue. They're actually cycling the full issue, but there's some good talent on this book, and it's really fun. Ray Palmer, Frankenstein, and Amethyst were the lead characters in the newest issue.
Man, is there somebody we can talk to DC to talk to them about going back in time and changing the name of that series 52 to something else? So just to avoid confusion. Just the difference between 52, it has nothing to do with the new 52.
Well, that's why it has to be the new 52, is because they couldn't, 52. couldn't just call it DC 52. All right, well, let's move on to some movie stuff. There is a, we're recording this on a day that a big news story got, a rumor has broken, about upcoming Warner Brothers films. I have already predicted it. We're recording this on a Thursday, the day that the rumor broke. I'm already predicting that by the time you hear this episode, it will be debunked. So at this time, the rumor is that Batman versus Superman will be the kickoff of a very fast release schedule for movies that would have three movies in 2016 and three movies in 2017 and at least one in 2018. Batman vs. Superman, Shazam, Sandman in 2016, Justice League, Wonder Woman, and a Flash, Green Lantern in 2017, and then Man of Steel 2 in 2018. Let's start with, what are your odds that this is a real list?
I'm going with the basis of Shazam being the second movie, complete and utter nonsense. This makes no sense. I actually would love this release schedule. I love the movies in it. It's what I do if I was forced to work around the Justice League and Batman versus Superman. I like the schedule a whole lot. Hell, Flash has a movie. Teaming with Green Lantern actually makes a lot of sense to me. I want a Wonder Woman so bad. I want a Shazam so bad. But because Shazam is actually slated in there, I have to go, you know what? No, we would have heard casting news. It's scheduled to hit right after Batman versus Superman. We would have heard something by now. Plus, Neil Gaiman is sort of notorious for letting the cat out of the bag before stuff hits. We would have heard something about actual progress, like a release date from him or his team before this point. So I have to say, this is somebody having a little bit of fun.
What did they call that on South Park? Wasn't hijinks. You called out someone for just spreading nonsense. I think it's ridiculously unlikely. The movies on the list don't make a lot of sense. The pace of it absolutely doesn't make sense. It is something I said on Twitter today when I was asked to give a reaction. Warner Brothers produces probably 20 movies a year through the main Warner Brothers logo. They are not about to become a movie house for comics. Whenever people talk about comic book movies, they always make it Marvel versus DC as if Warner Brothers and DC are the same thing. DC is a fraction of Warner Brothers. They're not going to start making $200 million movies three times a year with DC properties. If Batman versus Superman is a huge success, maybe they go to two movies a year. But the idea that they're going to go from Man of Steel that made a bit of money, not a gigantic sum of money, but it made money, to three movies a year, seven movies a year in 2.5 years, is just laughable. I was looking at Warner Brothers' top grossing films of 2013. Man of Steel was their highest grossing film. It was also one of the most expensive films. Their highest money-making film was Gravity, which cost about $100 million, less than half what Man of Steel did, and made $700 million worldwide, which means it made a ton more cash than Man of Steel did, and there's no seven-picture deal for Gravity.
You have to look at Man of Steel has to be a little – it made a ton of money. Gross. But compared to other properties out there on the market – it did dismal. I mean, the Batman films all did way better, comparatively speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Iron Man, which does not get a bump from IMAX like Man of Steel did more cash money. This is Superman. It should have been absolutely the biggest thing on the market, and it wasn't. So they have to look at that and go, ooh, maybe we're going a little bit wrong here.
They made money, and they're doing a sequel. That's, to me, that's good news.
But
are
it
they
doesn't
making
mean that
seven?
They should
are they
extend.
Making, are they making seven sequels? Are they going to spend like $1.5 billion on this franchise in the next 4 years? Because realistically, that's what you're talking about these movies costing. You know, even at an average of $200 million. And Man of Steel is 225 is the reported budget. So say an average of $200 million. That's almost $1.5 billion investment. I just don't see it.
And Warner Brothers is a conservative company. So they're not, I really don't think they've always taken a let's wait and see approach. So, you know, I believe this could be the schedule, not the dates, but the order the films come out in. If the if Batman versus Superman does what they think it might do.
Yeah, and that's the other part is, like, I could see some of these being created parallel. Sandman on the list is a strange one because Sandman's not going to be a DC Universe movie. So why it would appear on this list at all? Doesn't make a lot of sense. Using Flash at this point doesn't make a lot of sense. I know some people for reasons that escape my logic want Arrow and Flash TV shows to tie in with films. After my experience with S.H.I.E.L.D., I 100% do not want that to happen. Cause I feel that the big problem S.H.I.E.L.D. had was it was just completely hamstrung by what the movies needed to do. And that they couldn't do anything until, like, that show was really good once Winter Soldier came out and they could finally get to what the TV show was about. But it spent the entire first half of the season treading water waiting for that to happen. I don't want that to happen with Arrow. And I don't see it happening because we've had a whole season of Arrow since Man of Steel came out. And at no point did they say, hey, remember that time Metropolis got destroyed? Well, you know, 8 square blocks of Metropolis got destroyed. And it was a world engine, and, you know, who's that guy that flew? At no point did that come up. and I think that even in a jaded world like Arrow lives in, at some point someone would say, hey, remember that guy that flies? Because it would get mentioned to me if it was a guy that
flew. Yeah, no, I can't see that happening, but... But yeah, at the same time, I understand that you want a cohesive universe of some sort. I think it's just a comic book guy thing that.
I think so.
But at this, I mean, they have iZombie coming out on the CW this year. I do not want any connection to the Flash or Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to the series, but. It didn't really connect in when it was a comic book. Why should it connect in when
and we've got Constantine as well in the fall, which isn't on CW, it's on NBC. So is that going to tie into Justice League Dark if they make, I mean, this schedule doesn't have a Justice League Dark film on it, which is, you know, which is supposedly still in pre-production.
Yeah, but that would be associated with Del Toro. And he has his own thing going on.
Yeah, it'd still be a WB film, though. Because he has talked about it fairly recently in terms of it being part of the Man of Steel universe.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
So, like,
I just
kind
of figured it would be completely... Actually, out of the rumored DC properties, that is the one I'd be most excited to see.
I was joking today, actually, that if Del Toro doesn't get this thing out of pre-production soon, Peter Jackson will just take it back. That's the pattern now. We'll have three Justice League Dark films. Well, really, it was only enough story for one.
And who would be the team? They like would they use Constantine? Since he's tied to another thing.
I don't know.
Would they want to use people with such a? I mean, to us, the comic book reader, he's huge, but
my guess would be no. Like it's. I mean, that's something else that that came up. I half jokingly said, well, I was 100% joking, that when they announced this week that Vincent D'Onofrio is going to be the Kingpin in the Daredevil TV show for Netflix, that I'm waiting for the person who talks about whitewashing that character because they only know the Kingpin from the Daredevil film. So just like Dark Team, I don't think Constantine. I don't think he muddy that.
Yeah, but we're talking muddy. Shade, the Changing Man, would be his replacement.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you do Zatanna. Zatanna's like she's simple to explain. You don't have to do a backstory, and you know.
Not Zatanna. You mean Madam?
No. I mean Zatanna. And maybe you do Xanadu as well. Zatanna's been on the team. Madam Xanadu has also been on the team. I don't know if you do both of them because they're, I mean, power set wise, they're not, I don't know if they're different enough. Like Zatanna is, she's already the most, one of the most popular Halloween costumes without anyone knowing what they're dressing as Zatanna. Madam Xanadu, right. I don't know.
Maybe Frankenstein, I think, definitely.
Yeah, Frankenstein. That's going to be an odd one because I don't know if you can make a movie with Frankenstein. I don't know if Universal. Oh no, I guess it was the I Frankenstein movie. So you must be able to do something with the character. I guess the I Frankenstein.
Although the look is a little too close to the Universal version that they might have a problem.
Yeah,
but I can't see Del Toro. I mean, Frankenstein is a Del Toro type character. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Shade is probably the hardest. I mean, I've read 80 issues of Shade comics, and I still find him hard to understand. And I couldn't explain what his powers are.
Yeah, there's that.
Visually, he's interesting. Like how you deal with him on screen, I don't know quite how you do it. Maybe you go back to the original Ditko stuff and make him simpler.
And Blue Devil, I mean, we're infringing on Hellbird Boy territory.
Yeah, there. And I mean, this has been in development for a while, so I don't even know which version. Like, it's hard to know whether they started from a version of this when the comic started like almost 3 years ago, or whether the team has now evolved toward what the film wanted to do. Cause the team just changed again at the end of, Forever Evil. And I actually don't even know who's on the team right now. Cause I tuned out of that book about halfway through Forever Evil and haven't come back to it.
It's strange. It's a book I enjoy. In small doses. I can read 10 issues at a time, and every once in a while I'll go, oh, I remember liking that. And I'll go back and buy 10 issues. I think I'm up to, like, issue 22 or something. And then I'll stop reading it and forget completely about it.
I will say that you can, you're okay to keep forgetting about the Blight storyline. You can jump right over that one. It's a bit of a train wreck.
Strangely, you know what? Those train wrecks are something I enjoy in comic books. When they, when they present a whole bunch of good ideas and then it goes nowhere. But yeah, no. But I have an issue. I have 22 issues. I can't like just stop. I have to read the next issue. And it may be the source of a future incarceration of mine that I can't stop when the storyline gets bad. Not when I can't skip a storyline.
Oh, find it in yourself. That's what I'll say. Yeah, I don't. I opened up just the preview pages. Dead Man, Satana, and Swamp Thing are the ones that are on the first couple of pages of the book. I know Night Nurse has been in it for a while.
I thought Night Nurse was Marvel.
Or is it Nightmare Nurse? I remember. I never remember which one's which. One of them's Marvel, one of them's DC, one of Nightmare Nurse and Night Nurse. It must be Nightmare Nurse. Anyway, I don't know. And according to the list that I have, will put solid money will be debunked by the time you hear this episode. Just Think Dark is not on the slate. So I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. I do expect the TV stuff will not tie in. I see people talking about how great Arrow is. I love Arrow. But at the same time, Smallville was very popular, and there was seemingly no consideration that Tom Welling would be Superman in either of the movies that happened while Smallville was on.
Which, I mean, I've gone on record saying I have problems with the Man of Steel movie. I think that would have been the way to go.
And I think
it's to blow up the Smallville universe. I'm not a particular fan, but I thought they put in enough work that there was enough backstory there that a Man of Steel movie with him was warranted. But
it stops being a Superman movie when you do that, and it starts being a Smallville movie. I would not have gone to a Smallville movie. Like, in the same way that I have zero interest in seeing a Veronica Mars movie because I never watched the Veronica Mars series. If they had called that something totally different, I might have seen the movie. If they had rebooted Veronica Mars, I would probably watch it.
Which, I was a fan of the series. I actually just watched the movie last night. Awesome!
Oh, good.
Loved it.
I'm glad you liked it.
But, yeah, you wouldn't... Unless you're a fan of the series, there's no point. And that saying that goes against my best interest of ever getting a sequel.
But yeah, like, realistically, like, there was something like, I don't know, like, what, 20, like 20, 30 million people would have had to, you know, like, would have seen Man of Steel in North America. Like, what were the ratings on Smallville by the end? Like a million?
Yeah, it was CW, man. So
yeah, so like
one to two million. And that series went on far long. I actually wasn't proposing a continuation of the continuity, although I would leave that open. But just cast the same actor.
You cast the same actor. You might as well have the same continuity. It's actually even worse to do it that way. Like, because then. I mean, look at what's happening right now with the Expanded Universe fans for Star Wars. They're all freaking out because the Expanded Universe is not going to be part of where Star Wars goes forward. Like, you'd be saying, we've got this guy that, like, we say looks like Superman. You liked him as Clark Kent, but that story never happened.
Yeah, but these are internet people. I mean, the same argument could... I got a friend who enjoys the new Star Trek movies, but
I do
can't compliment them without complaining that the next generation never happened. People take this way too seriously. And I mean, the next generation is there. It's done. There's nothing we can do about it. They can both exist. They're competing. They're not competing entities. We just have to reset a little bit. There is no reason to be upset about this.
You want to make them insane. You want to drive them completely insane. Point out that there is stuff that's still in continuity. Enterprise.
Yes. No. I have
all of Enterprise
that.
Is still in continuity. Nothing.
And he threatened to kick my ass.
That's what I like to.
He actually threatened the physical violence if I ever mention that particular concept again.
See, I don't know. And as time goes on, I'm less and less precious about this kind of thing. I have two shelves full of post-crisis, pre-New 52 DC books. They did not evaporate. I just read Starman. It is a wonderful series that I enjoyed completely even though it is no longer in continuity. Somehow I've still managed to muscle through and enjoy this incredibly well-crafted series.
Were you able to find, because I know you were scrounging back bins for the Shade Limited series.
Mo loaned it to me.
Okay. Well, good, you found it. Copy. Yeah. I'm glad. That was a nice little story arc in the middle of there.
Yeah, and I actually, I will still try to find my own copy because I didn't realize that Mike Zulie had worked on that. And Mike Zulie is my all-time favorite comic artist. I absolutely love his work.
Yeah, I was lucky to get it in the Omnibus editions of Starman, which I paid way too much for.
It is now worth even way too mucher. It's just that volume. Because 4 through 6 in hardcover are still available, and 1 and 2 were also produced in softcover. Volume 3 went out of print in hardcover, and then the softcover was canceled.
And because it also has the Hellboy issue in there, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if
Reprints are actually there's probably something going on there.
Yeah, and that may have been what happened, why it got canceled. Reportedly it was just low sales on the trades, why it got canceled. But unfortunately it is the one that is now very, very hard to find. And it is the only place the Shade miniseries has been reprinted.
And if it's worth more than $100, you will find mine on eBay.
It is in that ballpark. I think it was 75 or 80 or something like that. Yeah, it's.
I'll put it on my list of comics to sell for way too much.
That's right.
I've got a
signed saga that I'm hoping will pay off my mortgage in another couple of years.
I'd say sell that now, man.
Man, if which sounds good, but if there's even the whiff of like a movie deal off of that thing. I visited a retirement.
I've read community. Saga. There's not a movie.
might be a French anime. Yeah, French anime.
Yeah. Sell it now, man. All it's worth money. I learned that with the NAM number one. Oh, sell it now.
Oh, unload that baby. Yeah. Don't hang on to it. Yeah, we've all done that. We've all got one. We've all got something that we held on to way too long. Yeah. Mine was The Tick. In high school, I was offered like $10 an issue or something for The Tick. I think there you could probably get them at a quarter then. Yeah.
Although, in your defense, with that, I believe cover price on those were the $10. Julian right. Comics were never budget reads.
They were high for sure. What else do we want to talk about? The big comic book movie release. Last time we talked about comic movies, we talked about Winter Soldier. Days of Future Past has come out since then. Your review of Days of Future Past?
I actually have to say I loved it. It was a little too Xavier-centric. Unfortunately, I see this series going the way of, once again, the Star Trek movies. We start focusing on one character, coincidentally also portrayed in by half as by Patrick Stewart in this one, but I actually really dug it. I did not think they were going to be able to make up the strange continuity changes that were made in The Last Stand. But this is a big reset for the X-Men universe. I enjoyed it greatly.
Very cool.
And Quicksilver rocks. I thought they got the character right.
That was one of my that was definitely my in your face moment for that movie. Was there was so much hand wringing and whining and complaining when people saw that one picture of Quicksilver. And he is such the highlight and the joy of the film. I just absolutely love every second. I had a stupid grin on my face every second he was on screen. I just loved it. I loved the whole movie. I thought it was one of the best comic movies I've ever seen.
I mean, I was, I got my money's worth just in that little, probably 30-second bit where they do the slow motion, Quicksilver, let's just take care of this situation scene.
Oh, yeah, there's, he's got one kind of, yeah, one sizzle reel scene that is just really, it's incredibly well done, and it's just, you know, a ton of fun.
And I mean, you get what Quicksilver's all about there, his arrogance, his, because Quicksilver, when you don't actually know the character, comes off as a jerk, and he is, but he's so much more than that, and I thought that scene sort of exemplifies his, yeah, just why are you people so slow attitude towards stuff.
I had a laugh, though, that, as I was saying, I love Future's End, the comic series, and there was so much, woe is us, won't someone think of the children, when that Free Comic Day issue came out. And I will say, Free Comic Day is not Kids Comic Day. Yes, stores do things for kids, and I think that's awesome. It is not a day for kids comics. DC released a kids comic that day, as did Marvel. Future's End was not a kids comic. It is a new comic reader or returning comic reader day. So Future's End was an appropriate book to put out. God damn it, I hate that website. Anyway, it's just a hate-filled website. I'm not even saying their name. But I read that, and, you know, of course all the complaining was, oh, it's the dark future and, you know, superheroes are getting killed. And then I go see Days of Future Past. There's characters that get killed 2-3 times in this film. And it's awesome every time. Like, it's heroic and it's a dark future, and the whole point is to try to avoid the dark future, which is exactly what Future's End is about. You know, yes, it has to be a super dark future, or, like, I mean, if it was a nice, lovely future, there wouldn't be much of a story in trying to avoid it, would there? So I watched this, and I'm like, well, it's the second time that character just died. Where's the won't someone think of the children blog now? I thought the effects were great. The story was great. I thought Magneto, who is my favorite villain, is just, like, they really ramped up what he can do with his powers and how ridiculously powerful that character is.
I have to say, Ian McKellen, I thought he didn't look healthy in this film. This is the first time that I've ever seen him in a role that I went, oh, I don't know.
And they are, I mean, they're, don't think too hard about the timeline of these movies.
They've fixed a lot now.
They did, but I mean, it still doesn't quite make sense. I mean, Magneto and Professor X would have to be, like, it depends on when they take place too. Like, I think they say they don't, they intentionally don't say exact years for how for when the future stuff takes place. He says something like, I came 50 years in the past, but I don't think that means exactly 50 years from the day or anything. You know, it could be 45 years, could be 40 years. I thought the future stuff was more an alternate now. I didn't think it was 15 years from now, but it's still, you know, I mean, if it was 15 years from now, Magneto would be pushing 100 when he was like, in those scenes. So, you can't think too hard about that stuff. But I think they were playing older than the actors were. Though.
And this is the first time I've got Jinx powers. Blink's powers. She's awesome.
That's one of the few times that I've seen a character represented better on screen than I ever thought she was in the comics.
Her
powers were like really visually cool, like really well thought out, and that was the other thing people like. There was a lot of advance. Is this too many characters? The speed at which they introduced characters and told you what they did. I think there was only, like, out of the whole cast, there was only one character I think they stumbled on, which was Warpath, who I don't know they ever call Warpath.
They call him Warpath once.
Do they? Just, you know, and I was never 100% clear what his powers were.
Yeah, and let's face it, Warpath's powers in the comic book, that is Thunderbird's brother, is it not?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, his powers in the comic book are even pretty variable on the situation.
Yeah, he was introduced as one of the X-Force characters. The only reference to his powers other than being strong was Warpath tells us when they're coming. I think it's like something like that that they talk about. They know the Sentinels are coming, and Warpath's the first one to know they're coming. But it doesn't say whether he's got some kind of sense or whether he actually just physically sees them, like whether he's got really good vision. Like that's what I actually thought it was, just that his eyes are really good, which seemed a strange way for a warning system to work.
Yeah, but he's such a nothing character in the movie. Like, not that we couldn't develop in future, it doesn't matter. I had a little bit of a comic geeky moment, which I can divorce myself from. I'm willing to accept this in the movie universe and like that. And it's an important one, but movie universe, it works. Comic books, I don't want to see this happen. The evolution of Kitty Pryde's powers.
I thought it
I
was
thought that was strange at best.
a brilliant way to do this. I have no idea how it works with her powers. I thought it was a brilliant way to reverse one of the first complaints about the film. One of the first advanced complaints about the film, I should say, because if there has ever been a movie to like totally throw a pie in the face of everyone who whined about a film before it was ever released, this is the one. One of the advanced complaints was that Wolverine would be the one traveling in time, when in the original comics it was Kitty Pryde that traveled in time. For Kitty Pryde to travel in time, she would have had to go back to, she would have had to travel from her body to when her dad wished he would meet a nice girl, because she wouldn't have had a body to travel into. She'd be the most heroic fetus ever. But because it was going to be Wolverine traveling, and for film, it makes perfect sense why it'd be Wolverine. Not only the popularity, but because the reason they said it, you can use the same actor for both. And it makes it so much smoother that way. So to alter her powers and make her the one that's sending him, just was like, to me, a really cool way to make her vitally important to the mission, even though she's not the one that's going.
You're absolutely right, but the comic book guy in me wants to go, Rachel Summers, she's the perfect one to have in that role.
Can you imagine putting Rachel Summers into this thing? Like, just I get nosebleeds when I think of Rachel Summers in the comics. To introduce a character. Oh yeah, she's the daughter of the two dead characters. Both died in the film that we're trying to make you forget happened.
I didn't say it was the solution.
And while we're here, let's just bring in Cable, because we've messed things up enough. That's one thing I really did like, was that they acknowledged Last Stand. They used elements from it. They used characters from it. Let's remember that the awesomeness of Last Stand was Ellen Page as Kitty Pryde, because she makes every movie better, and Canadian treasure, and it basically makes everything in Wolverine Origins disposable, because anything of value and anything that was important in Wolverine Origins is contradicted directly by things that happen in Days of Future Past, which makes it removable from the series entirely, which is great. I love that.
Yet you like the movie.
I absolutely love the movie. I hate Wolverine Origins. Despise it.
No, but you like The Last Stand, which I still find. Sorry, you're saying Wolverine Origins can be removed.
Wolverine Origins can be removed.
Sorry.
Last Stand, I enjoy parts of Last Stand. It's not a perfect movie. It's not a well-crafted movie. I would say as a film, Last Stand is terrible. As a movie, it's fine. It's not the best film, but there's a couple of good performances. For example, Ellen Page. I actually really like moving Golden Gate Bridge thing, and you know, anything with Alcatraz, that was cool for me. Just watched Escape from Alcatraz on the weekend. So yeah, I mean, there's good bits. It's not. I'm glad there were more films after it, so it's not the end of the series. Compared to Wolverine Origins, however, it's Citizen freaking Kane.
So, are we going to continue? Like, are we going to have a return of the young Xavier and Magneto? Do you think, or are we going to return to the original Bryan Singer series for the next X-Men movie?
I don't know where you go with the cast after this one. I mean, we've kept this spoiler free till now. Let's go spoiler warning for the next 4.25 minutes. We know it is public that that Age of Apocalypse will be the next film. There is a teaser to that. How this film ends, how Days of Future Past ends, really did leave me with the question of which cast do you use and which characters do you use going forward. Do you make it a Wolverine and Mystique film? Like, where do you go from here with the, like, which cast do you use? And that may be intentional for just, they may not know yet. They may not know where they want to go after this one. They know what they want the villain to be, but they may want an entirely different cast. So yeah, I don't.
This is probably the time to do it. Marvel Girl had a nice little cameo at the end there. We could recast the entire X-Men movie at this point, and I think it would survive the transition.
Yeah, and they have said that Gambit will be in the next one.
Okay, maybe it won't survive.
You haven't heard that one. Gambit is happening, and it's.
No, I just hate the character.
Well, and there's casting for it. What Magic Mike guy? What's his name again? He's in G.I. Joe. Magic Mike.
Tatum.
Channing Tatum. Channing Tatum is playing Gambit.
Well, that has to be the worst character casting I have ever heard.
And tell me
he's playing Cyclops. I go, oh, okay.
Well, and Bleeding Cool is reporting that it's a seven pitchers over 2.5 years starring Gambit. No, I'm making that part up. they're gonna do three Gambit movies a year in 2015.
He has a ridiculous accent in the comic book, which has never been written properly. His origins are ridiculous. His powers are stupid. I don't get the appeal of the character.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not against Channing Tatum as an actor, actually.
No, I quite like him as an actor. Well,
yeah.
Sorry, I like what he does on the screen, but asking him to do an accent might be a little bit much. You know, you get him to play G.I. Joe. Fine.
Yeah, I don't know.
Giving him any sort of range would be a mistake.
Yeah, it's an interesting spot for the franchise because, I mean, Jackman has said he has 1 to 2 movies left in him for the character.
You also have to read into that is I want some money.
Well, I mean, and sometimes it is money, but sometimes it's, you know, the damage he's doing to his body. Like, it's HGH. Let's, you know, call it what it is. He's not exercising and then dehydrating. The dude's on HGH. So he's talking at least of one more X-Men and one more Wolverine. And I mean, that's probably 3 years worth of work. It wouldn't surprise me for him to walk away. That's a huge body of work.
And strangely, I'm okay with recasting of Wolverine. I'd like to see a new Wolverine.
Yeah, it's a strange one because no one recasts anymore. Like, not at this level. James Bond did it for, you know, what, 35 years without rebooting the series. This guy's Bond now. Let's go. You know, there'd be a cheeky, like, and, you know, have him have a cool way for him to say, "I'm Bond, James Bond," in the first 5 minutes, and the audience goes, "Oh, that guy's Bond now," and you just go on about your business. You didn't need to reboot anything. But it just,
how often in the comic books do we get a new look or an artist who doesn't think Wolverine's sideburn should be quite that long? I mean, there are plenty of actors. I mean, as long as they don't go completely off script and get somebody who sort of looks like a Wolverine, I'm in.
This is Jonah Hill.
Okay, I'm against that casting.
Jonah Hill, HGH. Let's make it happen. Yeah, at this point, I don't expect them to reboot. I mean, First Class was basically a reboot, and they said, no, it wasn't. Like, it's not a reboot after all.
It was actually, one of the big surprises for me with the new film, A Days of Future Past, was how quickly they dispensed with the cast of the last movie.
I thought that was awesome.
Just as a passing reference, these people are dead now.
And all of these, whenever they do that in a TV series, I call it the contract renegotiation storyline. Like, that's basically like this guy, we got him for a day. Everyone else, they wanted too much for the day.
Because Havoc was the only returning character, the only supporting character returning from the previous film, right?
Except for the obvious ones,
Beast and Xavier and Magneto,
Mystique,
yes.
Yeah, and everyone else disposed of pretty handily. Like, that guy, he's dead. That one, also dead. This guy wanted too much money.
I have to say, from the previous film, I thought he was dispensed way too quickly. And I like them, Darwin, a major X-Factor cast member over the years. He was killed in that first film. I was hoping for a return, and they kill even more characters.
Yeah, the hilarity of again, like, you have to put aside, you have to put aside the comic book continuity when you watch the movies, but the amount of complaints. But Azazel can't be dead because he's Nightcrawler's dad. No one knows that. I didn't know that. When the character was in First Class, I had never encountered that character before.
Sorry, who's supposed to be Nightcrawler's dad? I thought Mystique was supposed to be Nightcrawler's dad.
I don't know. It never makes any sense to me. No, Mystique is Nightcrawler's mother, and Azazel is the father. There was another variation in which Mystique was going to be the father, and Destiny was going to be the mother.
Yeah, that's the one I always believed.
There was a version before that was going to be Mystique and Sabretooth, which is what was in Age of Apocalypse. They have altered this over the years. I think it was Grant Morrison's was the one that was going to be Mystique and Destiny, but it never ended up in continuity. It was more implied, same as Mystique and Sabretooth was implied in Age of Apocalypse, but never ended up in continuity. So. Continuity is written by those who write the last story and usually the least creative one.
I was never happy with any of the versions I've heard, but.
Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe it's just my annoyance with the Summers family tree. It didn't need to be anyone. Like, I
that character. You mentioned annoyance with the Summers family tree, and we haven't even mentioned X-Man. That is amazing.
Oh, I get nosebleeds when I think of X-Man. Honestly, the Summers family tree is so messed up that when I first heard about Hope Summers, not knowing her origin, I just assumed she was another of Scott's kids and didn't think anything of it. Like, oh, Scott had another kid. Okay, makes sense. Moving on. And it's like, well, she's Cable's daughter. Oh, that's dumb. Whatever. Move on. Well, she's not really his daughter. I'm like, shut up. Stop calling her Summers then. I'm sick of hearing you this.
I actually thought she was Cable's daughter, but
Cable's adopted daughter.
Ugh.
Sure, Wikipedia can help you figure that out.
Yeah, no, not with charts. Not with Wikipedia does not have enough charts and graphs to explain to me the Rachels. I mean, next thing, next, yeah. I actually, if somebody could point me towards a map for both the Summers family and Magneto's family tree, explaining me actual lineage, that would be. Great.
I laugh so hard. I was the only person in the theater. Now there's another example of do not ever mistake the comic audience for all of the movie audience. I was the only person in a sold out theater who laughed at Quicksilver's "My mom knew a guy with powers like that" line.
Oh, really?
My mom knew.
I died laughing at that joke.
Oh, I laughed so hard. It was the only sound in the theater was my laughter in a sold out theater.
Since we're talking about this, this is a burning question for me. Have they ever reconciled the Whizzer and later Lady Liberty? Because at one time they were supposed to be parents of Magneto.
Yes. No, they were supposed to be the parents of Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch.
Oh.
Yeah. They were supposed to be Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. In the original version of their origin, Whizzer and Lady Liberty were Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch's parents. They retcon that much later to have Magneto be their parent, be their father.
Okay.
And I think that there's something about how that they raised them at some point, but it was, or that they were told. But I mean, there's so many retcons in the Marvel universe that it's hard to keep track. Like,
but Juggernaut is still Xavier's brother,
half brother, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they have the same.
As long as we keep that little
same,
bit, I'm
same kidding. Father, different mothers, I think. Yeah, same father, different mothers. And I don't know at what point they made Magneto, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver's father. It wasn't from their first appearance though. It was quite a bit.
No, I actually believe it was in the Avengers when both Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver became Avengers for a brief amount. Well, longer than brief.
Again, the advanced whining. They saw that picture of the little girl in the Princess S costume with Quicksilver and like, this better not be Scarlet Witch. I'm like, the girl doesn't even have any lines. What the frick is your problem? The girl in a dress.
I wonder how many minds are going to explode when the Avengers comes out and they have a Quicksilver in a different continuity.
You are mad at an 8-year-old girl in a princess dress. That's because she may wreck your precious 50-year-old Avengers continuity. I don't know. It'll be curious how if people are confused by the Avengers. I mean, I think the average person gets that they're not in the same, that they don't tie together.
You're wrong there. I still have people coming up to me.
Oh, really?
Asking me about a Batman, Spider-Man crossover, and I have to explain different companies. So having the four, or I guess it's three now, existing Marvel things going on is still confusing to a lot of people.
It will be four because they're, from what I've heard, Fantastic Four will not be in the continuity of X-Men.
Right.
So,
okay.
So we'll have four when that one restarts. Four Marvel continuities.
Now, how since we're talking continuities now, how do you feel about the announced Spider-Man projects?
I think that they'll be. I don't know. They're going to have a hard road when Amazing Spider-Man 2 didn't do great box office. I don't know how you, again, like what I was saying about. Do you put seven movies together after a okay performing Man of Steel? They're apparently going quite big into Spider-Man, and Amazing Spider-Man 2 didn't make great money. Again,
see, but with Sony's position, they have to make a movie.
Yeah, and that's
to keep the property. They want the property because they know as soon as they release the property back to Marvel, they'll be getting their asses kicked by a property they used to own.
They
have to make something.
They have to make something with Spider-Man. They don't have to make Venom, and they don't have to make Superior Foes or whatever they're calling it.
I thought as long as they use the characters they got with the property, they were good. Which is why I thought a Sinister Six movie was the right way to go.
I'm sure there's a 500-page contract that explains it. My understanding is that it's Spider-Man they have to do something with, but I absolutely no idea. I mean, maybe...
Well, then Sony's toast because they don't know what to do with it.
Maybe even mentioning him in the opening credits is enough, though. Like, I have no idea what the contract may say. Having Spider-Man come in at the beginning and end of the film may be enough. Like, you know, like he's the Crypt Keeper. just Spider-Man comes in, waves, says...
That is an incredibly bad idea.
Here's an adventure.
Do not forward this podcast to anyone who works at Sony.
Here's an adventure of my pal Flash Thompson. He has a costume. He calls himself Venom, and then he comes in with the end credits too.
No, I mean, if they were gonna do a Sinister Six movie in the vein of the comic book Superior Foes of Spider-Man, I think just having Spider-Man come in at the end and whip their asses would be a hilarious end to any movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they apparently are still going ahead with Sinister Six. There's no word on who those six are. There is a Venom movie in pre-production, but there's no word on which Venom it is. I'm really hoping for Agent Venom. No idea though. I haven't seen Amazing Spider-Man 2 either, so I don't know if they've introduced Flash Thompson as a character.
See, personally, I would like them to actually shake things up, be a little bit brave, and do a comic book. I think that would put the excitement back in, yet not taking things totally off track.
It would be amazing. It would be just terrific if someone made a movie with a female lead.
I think we're so primed that it would make tons of money if we actually brought out some of the female-centric characters and really did a big-budget type movie. I think it would be huge.
I don't know. Like, I hope so. But, I mean, we were talking about how much money is involved in these, and, you know, like you're saying, Warner Brothers is conservative. You know, all studios are conservative. When you're talking about $100 to $200 million that you're spending on a movie before you market it, that's not something that you take a lot of gambles with. And when you're playing with that, when you're risking that kind of money, you get superstitious. And you know, just the way John Carter was not John Carter, Warlord of Mars, because one of the producers worked on a movie that had Mars in the title. It didn't do well. That is the reason why it's not Warlord of Mars. It's because someone was superstitious about the word Mars. And that's and Elektra and Catwoman are the reason why we haven't seen a super heroine film in, you know, 10 years.
Now, just out of curiosity, do you think adding Mars into the John Carter title would have helped it at all?
No, I think not targeting it toward fans of John Carter, existing fans of John Carter, World of Mars was the way to make that a good movie or a successful movie. I've heard people that love the film.
It's a great film. I loved it.
I did not make it through it. But I have yet to find the person who fits the I love the film, I had never encountered John Carter before. Check marks in the box.
Well, out of the five people who've seen it, that category could very possibly not exist.
So I think they made a movie that was very loyal to a branch to a property that had essentially been dead for 25 years.
Okay, I understand that.
So someday I because I know that because I have you know I know like how Longbox Graveyard loved the film or. very much enjoyed the film. I think I overstated his enjoyment of the film at some point. He slapped my fingers for it. He enjoyed the film. If you like the film, I've talked to other people that have, as I said, all of them are people that had an existing knowledge of that character though.
Oh yeah.
I mean, at some point I should, because I've seen, I try to see, as many, it's not a comic book property per se, because it was a book long before it was a comic. But I do try to see everything kind of even on the edges of this, wonderful genre we call superhero. So sometime I really should see the thing.
But, actually, John Carter has a larger comic book origins than, say, Tarzan.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, probably.
And we do that. I mean, a Tarzan movie comes out, I'm in line.
I don't think I've seen the last, like, two or three, to be honest. Because if they're not as good as Greystoke, I'm not going. And none of them are as good as Greystoke.
Lost City of Gold was painful.
But Lost City of Gold had the strangest thing to give it points for. It had the best surround sound I had heard to that date. I watched that film. It was one of the early films I saw on DVD, and I heard it in a properly set up surround sound that was set up by a guy who, set up speaker systems for live events. So it was a perfectly set up system. And
I can say something also positive about that movie, but go ahead.
And the surround sound, like when you were in the jungle scenes, it was perfect. Like it was so well crafted, and individual like animal sounds in different channels really created a great sense of space. It's kind of pretty. Casper Van Dien. What can you say about Casper Van Dien that hasn't been said before? I don't know what that means.
Joe R. Lansdell listed as story consultant.
Oh, really? I didn't.
I'm not sure how much consulting they did after seeing the final product, but
that's a bit like James Robinson is listed as one of the writers on the Batman, Son of the Batman animated that just came out. He had no idea his name was still on it. He had so little involvement with it. So someone, like literally, I saw on Twitter when someone told him his name was on it, and he said, "Well, that's very nice of him." I just wrote kind of a breakdown of it at the beginning, and have never talked to them since. So yeah, who knows what that consulting was? Maybe like he might have given them a reading list. Who knows?
Okay, this summer we've had more comic book movies than possibly ever before.
Mm-hmm.
I got one you probably haven't heard of.
Oh.
Have you heard of Dark Dungeon coming out this summer?
I've not heard of a comic called that, nor have I heard of a film called that.
And there's a reason for that. It is a movie based on, and you'll have to bear with me for 2 seconds here while I can't do it. A Jack Chick comic book.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Yes, you get this?
You catch him.
let me explain what a Jack Chick comic book is. For our listening audience, a Jack Chick comic was the propaganda comics that Christian organizations occasionally used in the 70s and 80s.
Still produced today.
Are they still produced?
Absolutely. Still produced and available today.
Propaganda comics produced to warn against certain evils. This particular one, The film production has bought the rights to the comic book for Dungeons and the comic book warning against playing Dungeons and Dragons.
That is awesome. I've been waiting for the gritty reboot of Mazes and Monsters.
But in the comic book, which is available free online, I looked it up. You can see what amazing things happen to you when you play D&D.
That is awesome. I
just love somebody cared enough to make a movie of this sucker.
I love it. I want to see it now. Okay, well, I want to talk about one last thing before we close out the episode. Hopefully our listeners have now heard the archived episode, which was, it was really strange for me to listen to, that episode that we found in the vaults from, 13 years ago, when we were recording this, in person and by cell phone, usually huddled around a microphone, sometimes speakerphones. But good times, obviously, we've liked it because we've kept doing it all these years. And then finally switched to the podcast format just a couple of years ago. But Josie and the Pussycats came up in conversation. And because inspired by that classic episode of We Talk Comics from 2001, I rewatched Josie and the Pussycats on the weekend.
As did I.
As did you. I'm going to let you go first.
Actually, no, you go first. I know you loved it, and I'd love to actually call you a task on a couple of things, so I'll let you sink yourself first.
I loved it. For 5 days, I could not get the song Three Small Words out of my head, and now that I've said it again, I'm sure I've got five more ahead of me, which is one of the it was just the opening song of the film. I think it's fun. I think it's clever. I think it's self-aware. The running gag of the product placement I found very, very funny. Alan Cumming, we've mentioned Nightcrawler. Alan Cumming played Nightcrawler in X-Men 2. Look at the way we tie all this together. His character was great. Cartoonishly villainous. I just find it a very joyful film, and like a really fun cast, an interesting cast. I had actually forgotten that Rosario Dawson was in it, so fun seeing her like that early in her career. And terrific soundtrack, terrific, like just super soundtrack. I actually went out and bought three more albums by the former lead singer of Letters to Cleo, who sang all the songs for the film.
Wow. Could not disagree more. I found the entire film ham-handed. Every joke was so telegraphed that it wasn't funny by the time they actually got to the punchline. I completely did not enjoy that. You also enjoyed Spice World, did you not? I think there's an apt comparison there.
I think there's a very, very apt comparison. I believe Alan Cumming just plays the same character in both.
Bridging the two, I could actually be in for a trilogy. But
sorry, it's Richard E. Grant is in Spice World playing essentially the character that Alan Cumming plays in Josie and the Pussycats. There is a physical similarity between them, but they are basically playing the same character. I don't think that there's any Spice Girls things that I don't love. So it's not a great one to. Like, you probably like that too. Yes, I do. I don't even think there's a song by the Spice Girls I don't love. Like, again, joyful. Like, it's just joyful. That is the second strangest factoid about me is that I'm a huge Spice Girls fan. The number one strangest is, of course, that I have never driven a car. I'm 41. And the B part is that there is no reason for that. I've never driven a car, and there is no reason for that.
This is a bonding thing for me and Keith because I did not drive until 5 years ago. Do you have any troubles crossing the border? I had troubles before I actually got an official driver's license.
I always had a voluntary ID, and I don't know that I travel. I didn't travel that much when I had it.
After 9/11, I did try, and I had to meet the dogs before they let me cross the border. So
I have an anecdote for you. I have an anecdote for you. As someone who has gone through the voluntary ID, is this even a real ID situation? I was going to Burning Man in 2004. We were driving in a van. There were five of us. five of us in a van with camping gear. Three of the five clearly hippie-ish. And we're at the border. I have an expired voluntary ID and my birth certificate. I fully expected I was walking back to the nearest bus station at that border because I hadn't realized my ID was running out of date. I went to go get a new one and they said it would be like 6 weeks and it was like 2 weeks before I was traveling. So I actually reported it stolen just in case they could get it to me. So not only was I was traveling with an expired voluntary ID that had been reported lost. That's what I had in my hand as ID. Like, it couldn't have been worse ID. If it had just hand drawn it, it wouldn't have been worse ID than what I had on me. So we get stopped. Of course, the truck gets searched. I mean, you know, they're going to search them. They're going to search the Econoline van with full of hippies. We're all sitting there waiting, and I'm sweating bullets because I really do not think I'm going to get across the border. I see the guy in the Homeland Security uniform, you know, badge on his chest, emblem on the shoulder, Homeland Security, with my ID in his hand, walks over to the border security guard and says, "We have no problem with him," and walks away, and off we were into Burning Man.
You know what? I was firmly against many of the changes that 9/11 made or changes after 9/11. Hearing that story, it does not sound as excessive as, wow.
I would not have let myself across the border. But apparently I can pass a Homeland Security background check, which is a good thing to know. Hopefully I will never need to have that happen, but good to know that I can pass one. As of 2004, I hadn't made it on any lists anyway. I can't imagine since then that I've done anything worth putting me on a list for. yeah, that moment of...
Unless importing an illegal job was has become a major thing.
Yeah, it's funny, like, I was a big conspiracy guy from, you know, my teens through to 2011. And when 9/11 happened, I had the light. I saw the light and in that moment I said, either no one is paying attention to everything that's happening or they're incompetent. Either way, I've been afraid for way too long.
Wow.
So you're wrong about Justin the Pussycats. I'm right. We're both right about Days of Future Past. I'm predicting 1 to 2 days before the DC list gets debunked. You think it could be upwards of 3 to 4 days?
No. The list is actually so ridiculous. Hours. I would not be surprised if it's debunked now.
we haven't checked while we're recording the episode to see if it's been debunked, but it wouldn't, again, yeah, I agree, it wouldn't surprise me either. I just, one of my Twitter pals, I just declined to have any conversation about it because I said I really don't expect it to last any length of time that's worth talking about. It'll be like that DC that list of DC books that were supposedly supposed to launch in July that were, you know, would have been a really cool set of books, and it had no, it just turned out to be some fan said, wouldn't it be cool if these were six books they put out?
Although most of them actually have come true now, haven't they?
I think two of them.
We got a Booster Gold.
Booster Gold. Booster Gold was I don't think it was any realistic. Like, Booster Gold was going to happen sometime this year. They're doing a friggin' year-long Visions of the Future storyline. And it's one of Jeff John's favorite characters, like that character. And Dan Jurgens is writing Future's End. That character was coming back. So that was like, you know, you weren't playing the long odds to say, to have said that there was going to be another Batman book would have been slightly worse odds than the Booster Gold book happening this year. All right, what's the next comic movie? Planet of the
I
Apes is
believe.
the next awesome movie.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that one as well. I believe Sin City, just off the top of my head.
Guardians. No, Guardians before that.
Guardians. August, yeah, August 1st.
One, and Sin City is it later August, or is it later in the...
I'm not sure, actually. I just know I got a new trailer online today, so...
Soonish, anyway. Yeah, I noticed there's a lot of trailers and posters and stuff, so I know it's...
There's something we haven't talked about. Have you seen the band cover, poster for Sin City?
I did, and I've there's a bit too much was made of it. I mean, I think that the MPAA says no to posters all the time.
Yes. No, I just actually found their wording of the notice
I thought
we're
it
not
was
allowed to.
it was funny, like
The actual word underboob was used, which I
was it
found
really?
hilarious.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes.
That's awesome. Well, because there was some phrase of there was some phrase in it about a like the a dark tone outline of an areola. It was something like that. That was like, and it
Yeah,
what
underboob came after that,
yeah.
But
But that phrase that like you know it was like very carefully saying we're pretty sure we can see a nipple. Reminded me so much of the movie Scrooged, where the rate at the FCC rep says, "I can see nipple," and Bill Murray stops one of the work guys and he says, "Can you see nipple?" The guy says, "No." Yeah, and he's really looking. That was exactly what I thought of when they said that. And I'm looking at the poster and all I can think is, "I'm really looking," and I'm still.
No, and
maybe.
I have to wonder how many, I mean, Sin City has produced for this new movie, what, 24, 50, I don't know. How there have been so many posters. And because I'm interested and I love the aesthetic, I always look at these posters. If the poster got produced, how many venues would they possibly be hung?
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that's...
This is an internet thing. They wanted a poster to cause some controversy.
Yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised to find out because I mean, somebody told whatever kitschy website broke this story. Somebody told them that it got turned down. I think it was Ain't It Cool News was the one that put it up first, and so I mean, someone went to Ain't It Cool and said, "Oh, they won't show this poster." I mean, Robert Rodriguez, best pals with the Ain't It Cool guys. They live across town. It wouldn't surprise me that they intentionally put in one, but I mean, like you said, how many of these would have actually gone out into the world had it been accepted? There's like, 10 or 20 different character pictures.
And they're all cool, but they're all for internet consumption.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And this one will sell very well. In music stores now because it was banned.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even realize that. I wonder if I can order it online now.
Yeah, absolutely. I bet you check with your movie poster shops, and you'll be able to get that one this year. That'll be the best selling poster at Christmas. I love the word banned is just hilarious to me because it's so misused. This poster wasn't banned. The MPAA has to put their label on it, and they said they weren't. That's the end of the story. I mean, there's nothing banned about this poster. there is no like giant government.
It was not endorsed by it would be the better terminology.
Yeah. Yeah, and which means movie theaters wouldn't put it up, so there's no reason to send it out. They're not going to put it up without that movie rating sticker on it. So why would you produce them and send them out?
Just because we're talking about this, were you at all disappointed that the rating box on the new Godzilla movie did not read Godzilla-style violence? Every other Godzilla movie has Godzilla-style violence in the ratings box.
I did have a moment when the top complaint about the new Godzilla is that Godzilla is not in it enough. And then I watched like six Godzilla films. I'm like, he's not in these damn movies either. it's an hour into any of these movies before you see Godzilla. It's one of those complaints, like, you know, all the prequels have terrible acting. You see Return of the Jedi, it's awful. I mean, come on. It's for kids. You know, shut up. you're too stupid to live. It's like they made this. Yeah, it's like they made this movie for people who were, you know, 8 years old. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding, Sherlock. It's the same people they were, be the same 8 year olds they were selling Ewoks to in 1983. there's not enough Godzilla. There is so much more Godzilla in this movie than any of the early Godzilla films.
Yes. Which, actually, you were complaining about Godzilla versus King Kong on Twitter the other day.
Oh, isn't that?
That's one of my favorites.
See, and we can now bring this episode to a close on the idea that my joy can be found in Josie and the Pussycats, and your joy can be found in Godzilla versus King Kong, and we have a mutual respect for silliness yeah. that makes us smile. If there should be a slogan for We Talk Comics, is we respect the things that make the silliness that makes you smile. Too long for a t-shirt, but still a good slogan.
Yes. And if you'd like to catch any of our silliness on Twitter or anything like that, I'm Chris_WeTalk, and you are?
I am @CubReporterK, and you can also follow @WeTalkPodcasts on Twitter, which is the home of both WeTalk Comics and WeTalk Wrestling, and the occasionally produced WeTalk Music. And follow our erstwhile co-hosts @Brett_WeTalk and @Mo_WeTalk. They've been bringing some great interview episodes. Frank Barbieri episode was really, really great that Brett just did. Fred Van Lente very recently. I know they're working on some more that will be really, really cool. If there's nothing else, we will end with Josie and the Pussycats, three small words, which I'll make for a point. So, and we are OUT.